Pacifico, Bill Hendrick.
We can get on the line with us. I want to get Vernon Dozier on the line, a high school football coach. He is coach of Belmar Academy's varsity football team, but he's also an educator. He's one of the administrators there at Belmar. He is one of the senior class advisors, teaches history, teaches social studies, and he's on the line with us to discuss something, but really more as a coach, Vernon, this score. This young man playing Division III basketball on Tuesday night, setting an NC2A record of 138 points.
Right.
And I know you have some definite opinions about that. I want to let my audience in on this. First of all, I want to tell you, you are listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show, and a very pleasant good evening to you, wherever you are. We're here until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and with me is Bud Dickman, Robert Leonard, Margaret Gray. Margaret, you played basketball in college, didn't you?
Well, I played. I played on the women's team. Yeah, I played.
What year?
I played in my freshman and my sophomore year, and by then I'd grown a little bit tired of it. But
were you any good?
Was I any good? Yes. Well,
did you start?
No, I was not a starter. No.
What position?
Yeah. What position you play?
You know, before, I don't like the way he's looking at me.
What?
He's saying, what position did you play? Looking me up and down.
I'm looking you up and down.
Margaret.
What? Ask your question again.
What position did you play?
I was a guard.
All right. Where'd you go to school? You went to Penn, right?
I went to the University of Pennsylvania. Not Penn State, bud. The University of Pennsylvania.
But what's the difference? She never says.
Penn State. You want to tell him?
No, you do it.
But Penn State is the public. They're both public universities, I think.
Yes, they're both public universities. Penn State is the state university, and the University of Pennsylvania is the University of Pennsylvania. I don't know how to describe it.
Okay, well, in any event, they're two different schools. So with me here is Vernon Dozier. So you played a guard.
Yeah, I played up. I played well enough to substitute. On, you know, when we were rotating the lineups, we were rotating guards, and I would go in. But I was, and I liked playing basketball, and I could have been probably a lot better than I was. But I just, by my junior year, I was grown very, very tired of that. I wanted to get married, and I really wanted to leave Pennsylvania, and I wanted to come out west and try my hand at the at acting. So I'd gone into theater arts, and I really didn't have time any longer.
You know, it was interesting. My son, when he was in high school, he played football, and Coach, are you there?
Yeah, I'm ready.
My son, Nick, when he was playing high school football, he also was involved in the theater program at school. And when we would go and see him in these different productions, you know, whether he was in Guys and Dolls, I think the senior class every year they would, not the senior class, but the theater group, would every year they'd have a show, and Guys and Dolls, and they did...
Didn't you say they did West Side Story?
West Side Story, yes, they did. They did Godspell. And a lot of the football players were in the theater arts program. And I don't know if you've... Have you seen that? I didn't know that football players... I thought it was a little bit different when I was in school.
I don't know. That's not anything I pay any attention to, but...
Okay. How about you, Margaret?
No, I It's really not... And I know you have... It's really not interesting. Just...
Yeah, move on.
It's really not interesting, huh?
Not really, no.
I will. Can I jump in, Phil?
Go ahead.
I'm on here for a reason. I think it should be for the reason that I'm on here and not to listen to you talk about. I don't mean to be rude, Phil, but
no, it's all right.
I just listening to you talk about your son dancing around. You played football, and that I'd love to hear about that.
All right, never mind. We're on with Vernon Dozier here, and we're going to talk about this player, Jack Taylor. He plays for Grinnell College or Grinnell College. I haven't even had enough time to figure out how to pronounce it, which is probably very disrespectful of me.
I think it is. I think before you do a news story, it should be something that you would familiarize. What?
Just let me finish, please.
I can tell you, Phil, I think it's pronounced Grinnell or Grinnell.
Do you know the school?
Say that again?
Do you know the school?
No, I do not. I'm just taking a wild guess. To me, it looks like Grinnell. To me, that's Grinnell or Grinnell, something like that. Probably. I know it's Faith Baptist, which probably isn't that Faith Baptist Bible College. I'm familiar with them because I've heard of them. And I don't know where I heard of Faith Baptist. I think I might have been to a coach's clinic and someone said I'm from Faith. Someone introduced themselves and said that they're from Faith Baptist. I don't know, but I wouldn't have taken notice on that. But the Grinnell, so probably is Grinnell.
All right, well, we'll figure it out. Anyway, Jack Taylor thought his cold shooting streak from the weekend was spilling over into the week. But it turns out Taylor was just about to heat up. The Grinnell College sophomore guard, I'm pronouncing it Grinnell.
All right, well, again, I think it's Grinnell.
I think it's Grinnell or probably it's Grinnell, which no one has.
Let's forget about what it is, okay?
Yeah, but she's going to do the French.
Yeah, it's Grinnell.
That's the French pronunciation.
In my opinion, yes.
The French pronunciation.
Yeah, that's... All right, so Grinnell College in Iowa, sophomore guard Jack Taylor scored an NCAA record of 138 points during the Pioneers' 179-104 win against Faith Baptist Bible College on Tuesday night. Mr. Taylor said, I don't really think it's set in. I think it definitely will in the next few days. I can't really get my mind around it right now. Taylor is a 5'10", 170-pound guard from the Black River Falls, Wisconsin area. He shot 52, now listen to this, Coach, 52 of 108 from the field, 27 of 71 from a three-point range, 7 of 10.
What was the three-point?
The three-point was 27 of 71.
Oh, if I had a guy taking 71 three-point shots, I would probably bench him just on principle alone, but the guy's that red hot. Although I got to tell you, 27, you said 27 of 71?
27 of 71, yeah. What is that, 30%?
Well, I guess it's, it's a little bit more than 30%, but it's from three-point range.
That was three-pointers, yeah.
I would like to think that he could do better than that, but again, I'm probably splitting hairs.
Well, Coach, I mean, my God, how many points do you get for a three-pointer?
Are you out of your mind or something?
Margaret, think about it.
What?
How many points do you get for a three-pointer?
Yes.
Well, why would he think?
Who's the way, ma'am? This is the coach. This is Coach Dozier. You get 3 points for a three-pointer, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Coach.
You're welcome. You might as well be polite to the lady.
All right, but I have 3 points for a three-pointer.
I asked the question, and I got a polite answer from the coach. I thank you very much, sir.
You're more than welcome.
All right, in any event, Taylor, 5'10", 170 pounds, from Black River Falls, Wisconsin.
Black River Falls. You've already been over that. Can we move on down?
Yeah, move on down to the part. You already did. All right, I'll move down. I know where I am. The 138 points passed Clarence Bevo Francis, who held both the NC2A and collegiate scoring mark when he dropped 113 points versus Hillside in 1954. Now, where did Clarence Bevo Francis go to school?
Probably went to Grinnell.
Why do you say that?
But I would say it's from Grinnell now.
Did he go to Grinnell? Or did he go to Grinnell? I don't know. What school are you talking about now?
We're talking about this school this guy is going to. What do you mean?
Well, they don't say. It might be the...
This school might be a school where they produce these kinds of shooters.
No, it's not. No, they don't mention the school the guy went to. They said 138 points scored by Taylor passed Clarence Bevo Francis, who held the NC2A and collegiate scoring mark when he dropped 113 versus Hillside in 1954, but they don't say what school he went to. Anyway, it's a kind of a life-changing moment, Grinnell coach Dave Arsenault said.
What a name.
Yeah.
Dave Ars what?
Dave Arsenault.
Well, at least it is an Ars face or something like that.
Yeah, but I'm not an Ars face.
I would think that imagine a guy being called Coach Ars, you know, Ars face.
Right, we just said that.
Yeah, we already said that.
Oh, okay. So you said it.
Never mind whether you said it or not. The coach was, in any event...
It is a little bit rude. If you already said it, allow me to say it. And I don't know.
All right, forget it. It's not that big of a deal.
Well, we said arseface, and then Robert said it, and then the coach says it, and he thinks that he's part of the...
Yeah, you thought you were part of the... Like, you came up with it.
Who cares who came up with it? It's not even important.
Yeah, but he's all like, hey, imagine our face.
I said it independent of you people, though.
Fine. Let's take a break, and let's get this thing under control.
Now, wait a minute. You can't.
Would you be a little more polite to my guest?
Well, what we do?
what you did was, if he says arseface after you said arseface, allow him to feel like he came up with it. He's a guest. He's a guest. He's a guest. You understand?
Yes, he's a guest. He's a guest. He's a guest.
Huh. He's a guest. He's a guest. He's a guest. Yeah, he's a guest. He's a guest.
Everybody now, one, two.
All right. We'll be right back to Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I said arseface right at the same time.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We got Mr. Lloyd Bonafide on the line, 877-876-PHIL. Lloyd, Lloyd's on where? What line is he on?
Line 32.
Line what, bud?
42.
Well, then why are you saying 42?
I said it's on 42.
Well, which is it? I'll try this one. Mr. Bonafide.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Yes. Bill, you were discussing Bevo Francis, and Bevo Francis played college basketball when I was in the Navy. We had deployed to Korea, but I recall reading of his exploits and enjoying the exploits of Bevo Francis and the different things that he did. Now, I want to let your listeners know that Bevo Francis is still alive, and he lives in, I believe he lives in New Mexico. He went to the University of the Rio Grande.
And did you know him, Mr. Bonafide?
No, I never knew him, but I followed his exploits in the news. As you know, we read the Stars and Stripes when we were deployed to Korea. And so we would read the Stars and Stripes and get news of his exploits. And he scored 118. Now, one thing to remember is that he scored 116 points, but they excluded that from the record book.
Why is that, sir?
Because it was against what they deemed to be a lesser competition. It was against the junior college.
And you learned, did you learn all of this in Stars and Stripes?
I learned all of it. Yes, I did, sir, reading the... And who am I speaking with?
This is Vernon Dozier, sir. I'm a coach.
Hold on for...
Oh, God.
Hold on for just a moment. I'm sorry, Mr. Hendry. Oh, God.
Are you all right, sir?
Yeah, you okay, Lloyd?
Yeah, no, I feel great. I feel fantastic, but I had to clear the... I had to clear an area there, and now there's full fluid motion going on now. And so...
Yeah, this Coach Dozier again.
Yes, let me just finish what I'm saying, okay?
All right, but I wanted to ask a question, if I might. Everything you know about this Bevo Francis you learned in the Star... in the, was it Stars and Stripes?
Everything I know about Bevo Francis... Well, yes, we read about the exploits, and when we deployed to Korea, you know, we were fighting for our country in Korea, and so we didn't have the opportunity to enjoy the basketball and these other events.
Okay, but what I'm saying is you didn't know Mr. Francis. You're just saying that you read a newspaper.
Well, you know something? It's more than you did, because you weren't... Did you read about him in the newspaper?
I was barely alive at that time. I was...
You were barely alive. Yeah, okay. So you were barely alive. You said it. I didn't.
Sir, I'd just been born, you know.
All right. I mean, there's no point. We have to be contentious here.
The point is that this... Lloyd, the point is this man, Bevo Francis...
I can't hear the lady.
Can I?
Bud, turn something down.
About this.
The point...
You turn her mic down.
The point, Lloyd... Lloyd, are you there?
I can't hear you.
Lloyd.
Look, why do you have me on the program if you're listening to Grandpa here? He read the Stars and Stripes.
Well, I heard that. And
Hold on, everybody. I want to... Thank you very much, Lloyd, for your call. Let's get back to the coach, okay?
Now, that's how you're talking. Thank you very much.
Wait a sec.
I just think, Mr. Andrew, if you're going to have a guest on, you know, you should...
All right, you're right. We're talking with Coach Dozier. We're talking about the 138 points that was scored last night by this Jack Taylor of Grinnell or Grinnell or Grinnell or whatever the hell the name of the school is. And Coach Dozier, though you were a football coach.
Okay, well, hold on for a minute. I've coached all sports. You know, I coached football because I was most successful at football, and Belmar over the years has hired basketball and baseball coaches, although I have to say, in all candor, and I think in fairness to me, none of them have lasted anywhere near the length of time that I have. So I'm best at Boo Ball or Bob Ball. I got it mixed up. I said I was going to say basketball, and I was going to say football, and I came out
with Boo Ball.
What, you know something, if you're trying to be funny...
No, ma'am, I'm not. I got nervous, and I mixed up football and basketball, and I came out with blue balls. Well, I'm sorry.
All right. Just never mind. You came out with something, and now it's... But we know that you're talking about what?
The sport that I coach, which is blue... Football.
Football! Is it football?
It's football, sir. It's not football! The way you said it.
Look, don't get angry at me. You're the guy... I can't believe we're having an argument about this. You know...
You're right, Mr. I apologize. I just...
Well, what are you nervous about?
I'm on the radio. I'm not used to being on the radio, and I apologize. I truly do. I'm just, as I said, I'm not used to being on the radio. But what I wanted to say to you is, this man Taylor, who plays the sport of bunt... Boy, I tell you, I'm having a hard time with that.
Basketball?
Yes, sir. I'm having a harder time believing that he was playing against anything that amounted to a hill of, you know what, rabbit turds. Because in modern basketball, if a guy goes out and scores 138 points, at some point you have to say either the other team is laying down or they should not be allowed to play or field a big-time college program. And I think at this particular point, this school, this Faith Baptist, whatever they call it, I think what's more to the point is that the NC2A should investigate that program and find out whether they're actually fielding a big-time college program.
All right, now that's an interesting point of view. What you're charging, or is this just an opinion?
I'm going to tell you right now, it's an opinion. Yeah, it's an opinion, but I do not see how a guy goes out and scores 138 points against a big-time college program. So,
So you're saying that are they cheating?
I don't think so, unless they find some evidence of impropriety, which would be the height it would be the complete height of irony to find out that a Jesus, you know, one of these Christian schools like our school is a Catholic school, is engaged in cheating. You know,
they would go to hell, wouldn't they? I mean, technically, I don't know about it.
They would do what?
They'd go to hell?
Who would go to hell, bud?
I don't know.
He doesn't know. He's saying that because it's a Christian school, they would go to hell.
I don't know, son. I'm not a preacher.
But, bud, let's put it this way. It would be a very public scandal. I'm sure a lot of people would say because they're a Christian college, it makes it all the worse. But whether they would all automatically go to hell, I think it would depend on whether there's a hell, whether they believe in hell, whether they all were involved in cheating, and whether in their religion cheating on basketball involves going to hell, you see?
Well, I don't understand about that. I thought you go to hell.
Who goes to hell? I don't know, man. Who knows, you know?
I can't believe that we're involved in a...
Let's just get back to the coach. So anyway, coach, because what I think you're saying here, it's very interesting... You're saying that it is impossible for a big-time school, a big-time college program, to be big-time and give up that kind of point total.
I believe so. So I think it's not so much, I'm not trying to take anything away from this young man, Mr. Taylor, but I am saying that the NC2A or the NAIA, which I don't know which it is, I think is it NC2A?
It's a Division III NC2A school, yeah.
All right, I think that the NC2A should immediately mount a investigation to find out. This is nothing that's going to, I don't see anybody, this is not a scandal or anything. I think they just have to make sure that this school qualifies as a NC2A program at any divisional level. It could very well be that they don't belong at Division III. Maybe they belong, maybe they belong, maybe they belong, Maybe they balloon. Boy, I'm having a heart ever since I said the, ever since I said boob ball and then I said blue ball. Has that ever happened to you?
Hold on, Coach, okay?
What's that, Phil?
Hold on for a second, all right?
All right, I just died.
We'll be right back as we talk to Coach Vernon Dozier about the 138 points scored in a basketball game, a college basketball game last night by a sophomore at Grinnell College. 138 points this guy scored. It breaks a NC2A record that was set in 1953. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Speed it up, Phil.
I'll go as fast as I want.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
So there is, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry, there he is, it's Bevo.
That's Bevo Francis there.
That's Bevo Francis. Let's get Coach Dozier back. Coach, are you looking at your Phil TV tonight?
I am, Phil. That's, yes, that, he looks like a stud there. Oh, he's still alive, huh?
Bevo Francis is still alive.
Well, why are we talking about him? The other guy's the guy.
Well, I just wanted to talk about the guy that whose record was broken.
Yeah, the guy's back on, too.
Which guy?
That Lloyd guy?
The Lloyd guy. The gentleman that we don't... Lloyd, we're all done with you.
Well, I called up to talk about this man that you have on your screen on the Phil TV, Bevo Francis, and I told you that if you hang up on me or you do...
Mr. Henry, can I...
That's all right. We put him on hold.
Well, thank you, because I'm not about to sit and be assaulted by a man who sounds to me as if he should be... I'm sorry, it sounds to me like someone should restrain him in the chair that he sits in, and I'm sure he's a man that spends a good part of his day in a chair facing a window that hopefully the morning sun gets to. I mean, you know, that's what we're talking about. And for all of the...
Yeah! I just broke off of hold because I heard what this ass was saying.
Wait a minute.
What did you just say to me?
I said I broke off of hold because I heard what you were saying. If you think that...
You broke off of hold. Are you listening to this? Hey, hold on, Phil. Hold on.
Wait a minute. We got to get...
Hold on. Hey, Ben. Dude, say that to this guy.
Hello? Yes, who is this?
I'm a weight coach.
I broke off of hold to talk to that ass.
Which what?
The one I'm assuming the one you're standing next to.
I'm standing next to my wife right now.
Give me the phone. He's standing next to his wife. Did you mean that?
You know full well I didn't mean that. Now, I called to say...
Where'd you go?
I put him back on hold. Would you fix the hold button, Bud, so that we can continue?
I don't know. The guy's going to break out of the hold.
Is this some kind of a joke? Because I'm getting a little nervous. A moment ago, we were talking about this Bevo Francis, which, by the way, that's how it's pronounced. So to sit here and Phil to...
Hold on. Bevo Francis?
I think that is untoward of a woman to come on a radio program.
No, I happen to know... Is it spelled B-E-V-O?
Yes.
Bevo or Bevo. Now, you don't have to believe me, and I know you think I'm trying to be funny.
Yeah, at this particular point, Margaret, it's past funny, okay?
Can I just finish, and I'll get off the phone, because I don't want to stay on this line any longer with a group of fruit balls.
Oh, yeah. I did it again, Marjorie.
I'll stop it.
No, I won't.
Is this Mr. Bonafide?
Yes, you know full GD well it's Mr. Bonafide.
That's it. I'm checking out. I don't need to be on the same line with some freak, okay? Some guy that breathes some fumes over in Korea. Or whatever it was they were feeding you in them in those comfort houses, huh? You know what I'm talking about, too, don't you?
Why, you dirty, filthy, if you're referring to what I think you're referring to...
Oh, full well I am. I bet you took full advantage of those comfort girls, didn't you, huh? Well, listen, pal, I'm checking way, way off of this planet. And I can tell you one other thing.
Did you put him on hold?
I hung up? Yes. No, what did you do, bud?
Put him on hold just to see if he can break off a hold.
Will you just hang up on the guy?
Oh, that guy can't break off a hold any more than I can't break off a hold. But hey!
I just broke off a hold. And I can tell both of you that you can go...
Okay, good. I don't want to talk to either one of those guys. Keep them out of my life. Keep them off of my phones. Keep them off of my phone banks. We're all done with both of them.
I have never in my life been talked to so rudely as for you to tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about when I tell you that I'm talking about a man that you were talking about, right?
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What am I talking? Are you trying to be a smartass now?
No, I'm not. What are you talking about? I just was talking to an old man that's breaking off a hold than the other guy.
I'm talking about the pronunciation of the B.
Man, you're going to say you say the wrong thing, and Mr. Henry be taken off the air.
Yeah, you better watch out how you say beef. And I didn't say it.
If you guys think you're going to mess around with that name just so you can slip one in on me.
Slip what? Slip something into what?
Yeah, let's see. You want to say Bevo so you can slip some...
Shut up! The name is Bevo, or Bevo, not Bevo.
My understanding is it's... Well, you're a child.
I mean, you know, maybe I'm a child. But I don't even want to talk about Bevo or this whatever name. I want to talk about the other guy. And by the way, bud, if we're going to talk about sports, then I would suggest you find somebody else because Coach Dozier, in my opinion, and this is only my opinion... has lost his ever-loving mind, okay?
Why do you say that?
Why do I say that? Because, first of all, he broke off a hold the same way Lloyd did, and right there is an indication of severe mental strain. Secondly, I don't know. Secondly, something. Secondly, he got all upset, I think, over that whole arseface thing. All right, in any event, you know the news. You've got it the way we've got it. When we get it, you'll get it.
Smile when you say that.
Okay, well, I am. I'm smiling. Anyway, you know the news. That man, Taylor, his name is Jack Taylor, and according to the Oklahoma City Thunder star, Kevin Durant, and one of the reasons why this is making national news today is because many NBA players are weighing in on this. They talked to a number of NBA players, including Mr. Durant, and he said, you deserve a shot at Jack Daniels on that. While the 138 points drew national attention, the 108 shot attempts equally stood out. The New York Knicks' Carmelo Anthony was stunned when he heard the news after his team's victory over the New Orleans Hornets. He said, I never heard of nothing like that. That's like a video game, Anthony said, an incredulous look on his face. How can you shoot 100 times, though? His elbow's got to be sore, Knicks teammate Raymond Felton joked. Faith Baptist, located in Ankeny, Iowa, is a member of the Midwest Christian College Conference. The schedule on the school website listed the Grinnell game as an exhibition. But according to Grinnell Sports Information Director Ted Schultz, the game absolutely is official and the record will count. Schultz said because of conference rules on the number of games that a team can play, Faith Baptist has to list some as exhibitions. Schultz said Grinnell has encountered that before but did check with its conference, the Midwest, on Tuesday morning to confirm the game counted. It's an exhibition for them but not for us, he said.
What does that mean, an exhibition?
It means it doesn't count for that team. It means it's you could view it as a warm-up. It's an exhibition. It's a fan. You know, it's like in college or in pro football, they have exhibition games. Or in baseball, they have...
They're like in spring training?
Like spring training games, exactly.
So it doesn't count, meaning what?
It means it's just to practice, you know?
Yeah, like they're trying to practice before the season starts.
But
this is in the middle of the season.
Yeah, because college is weird. College, they schedule odd numbers of games. And there's always this controversy in college, more in football than in basketball, that the teams load up their own schedules. You know, the teams sort of schedule who they want to play and who they don't want to play. And sometimes it lets a team in for a lot of criticism. Like, for instance, a lot of the SEC or the Southern teams in college football, people criticize them because all they do is play each other and they don't really get outside of their conference. I mean, there's a lot of teams in their conference. I don't know how some of these conferences can play any games outside of their conference when there's so many schools in it. Which, by the way, what was that thing you were showing me, Robert?
Yeah, the Big Ten.
There's going to be 14 teams in the Big Ten.
What is that? See, that I don't understand. How can you have 14 teams in a Big Ten?
That's not what it's called, a Big Ten.
What?
What do you mean, bud?
Well, I mean they did, but now it means something else. If you're going to call a Big Ten, and because they're on account of there's 10 teams, okay, all right, okay, I understand that. But now there's going to be 14 teams. The 10 got to represent something else. And I think it's probably like you were saying about Hercules. And I'm not trying to be dirty. If you just keep an open mind about it.
A Hercules?
Oh, I understand what that... You really have a mind that just is marinating in dung. You know that...
What's that mean?
So funny. Marinating in dung.
I really think it is, yes.
The Big Ten has added four schools. The Big Ten in college.
Yeah, like a Big Ten football?
Yeah, but I mean, the Big Ten is the conference for all sports. Now, the Big Ten, you know, they added Penn State, and I know they've just added, was it Maryland and Rutgers? And I heard the reasoning. They said, well, you know, the Midwest, the population base in the Midwest isn't growing anymore, but it is on the East Coast, so we needed to base ourselves, we needed to anchor ourselves on the East Coast. So they have Rutgers, they've got Maryland, they have Penn State, and I don't know the other team, but that's an enormous conference. That's 14 teams, which means obviously they're going to have two divisions, you know. So
I couldn't think of anything more boring to talk about than the Big Ten and the Big 14.
They don't call it Big 14. They call it a Big Ten in the manner of Hercules.
If he says that one more time.
Bud, you don't. Just shut up.
But what? Does it make sense?
No, it doesn't make sense. No.
Why not?
Who's asking you, Robert?
Well, you've got a good point.
Why not? Why not? That's what you're asking me, is why not?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Because it doesn't make any sense from the standpoint of simply trying to keep, you know, from being shut down completely or put into a mental institution. They're not going to say, I think we'll call ourselves the Big Ten because we've got a Big Ten like Hercules did, you know? In other words, they're not talking about virility, and they're not going to promote that as something that represents virility, because the commissioner and all of the people associated with the administration of the Big Ten would be put into a mental institution. Okay?
Well, why do you think a mental... I would think a jail cell.
No, you're not going to put a guy in a jail cell for that. You put him in a nut house. I'd put him in a nut house. I'd say, I may agree with you. I may think that's a great name, but for you to publicly say, that's why we call it the Big Ten, because of our Big Ten... For you to publicly say that, you belong in a nut house. So I'd fire them, and then I'd sign the papers on them.
That's just you don't show your loyalty.
Well, Bud, I got to tell you, I question your own. I mean, you know, I've questioned your mentality for years. But for you to actually sit and think, I got to be loyal to a guy because he called the...
You see what I'm saying? And why it is you put up with them?
Well, I mean, he's, you know, he's a good kid, but he's an idiot. You're just an idiot, Bud. Just face up to it, man. Live with it, man. Or as the man said to Jake LaMotta in the movie Raging Bull, live in it, son. Live in it. All right.
What was that?
When they were throwing him in his jail cell. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We do have other news besides this 138 points and the Big Ten. All kinds of stuff going on here in the world. We've got more news to report on our website and things to come in terms of our podcast and just, you know, really cool stuff. I don't know what. We'll find something. The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth. That's a great team. Is our
Thank
bitch.
You.
The Phil Henry Show.
Coming up is a lot of cool stuff.
Well, yeah, it is. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. We have Doug Danger on the line with us, and ordinarily we do not talk to Doug about gay issues because I know, Doug, first of all, you don't like talking about gay issues, even though you are a very much a public gay man, as well as a gay journalist, as you say. But I did want to ask you about this because I know that you have first of all, you have a very strong opinion about this particular topic. And secondly, I wanted to let people know, friends of ours on Facebook.
Sounds like the mafia.
I was going to say, yeah.
It sounds like what?
Sounds like the mafia.
I think they were saying, Phil, it sounds a little bit like the mafia, you know, when you're a friend of ours.
Oh, well, no. Well, we know that Doug is not, he's not in the mafia.
People that say I'm in a gay mafia. I'm not even in a gay mafia. I'm just a gay man and a gay journalist, Phil. That's all I am. I'm a humble gay man and a gay journalist trying to get my job done. You know, I'm trying to do the very best job I know how to do.
Well, I think that's a very good way of saying it. Now, this story having to do with San Francisco banning public nudity, it's an interesting story because, first of all, San Francisco is a city out here on the West Coast that one might argue is perhaps even more socially liberal than our own city here of Los Angeles or any other city that one might think of when one thinks of a socially liberal climate like a Miami, for instance, or maybe even, although I don't think you think of New York when you think of socially liberal. Would you, Margaret?
No, I agree with you. I think New York is very much a more, New York is a sort of an old, you know, as modern a city as New York is, as bustling and as busy a city as New York is, it still represents and still has a sort of an old money feel to it, like Boston. And it might be because of the East Coast feel to it.
Yeah, so I think if we think about socially liberal cities, San Francisco comes to mind. But there, the ban on nudity, which came about, I guess, because of certain public gatherings that just began to bother not only the city supervisors and certain elements in certain other kinds of public figures, but also the citizens at large, Doug. But it was not who one would necessarily expect the support coming from, was it?
Well, the people that support the let's just say it as it is, the people that support the public nudity ban in San Francisco are gay people. Now, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. That doesn't mean that I've got any special, you know, I don't have any special, you know, knowledge of the gay community because I'm just as much an outsider, if you will, in the gay community as I am in any other kind of community. I do that on purpose, too, Phil, because as a reporter, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, I want to make sure that I'm objective and I don't identify with any community. I'm not a member of any clique. You know, I'm not buddy-buddy or in the inside of any political group or anything like that. I don't know what's going on in the gay community any more than you do, you know.
And, well, come on, man. I mean, you're a reporter.
Well, I'm saying that a little. You know, I'm exaggerating a little bit. What I'm trying to say is, I would not be worth a pinch of you know what, if you pardon me for saying, if I was one of these people that identified more with one group than with another. I don't think it makes for good objective journalism. So I try to be as objective as I possibly can. Now, having said that, the gay community in San Francisco, not unlike a gay community in any other city, is probably a little bit sick and tired of a lot of these straight people coming into town from the outlying suburbs. And there's a picture here on the San Francisco Gate. This lady by the name of Gypsy Taub, she's talking against the Board of Supervisors' decision to ban public nudity. She took her clothes off. Now, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, but I know what a beautiful woman looks like, and she ain't it. You know?
Where is this? The SF Gate?
Yeah, so San Francisco Gate, if you take a look at her, she's got a face that'll stop time. She's got a body that would probably set civilization back years if anybody decided to sculpt that. She's got a pair on her that, and I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, but I can tell you right now, I know a quality woman when I see one. I know what a quality, beautiful woman looks like. I know what a beautiful woman's body looks like. She's got a pair on her that are, you know, another 6 months, those are going to hit her knees. When she walks,
all right, okay, Doug, I get it, all right.
I'm just trying to tell you, I'm a gay man, a gay journalist, and even I can see that she's about as frightening as Halloween Mary. And
well, you know something, I'm having a little hard, this is very difficult for me to hear. As a woman, I understand you're trying to make a point, but as a woman, I think it's very degrading.
Well, then she shouldn't degrade the city council meeting or the city supervisor meeting by walking in there with a body like that that will set civilization back years. Okay? If anybody decided to sculpt that, any part of that, what I'm looking at, then and put it in front of a library, they would traumatize old people, school children, kids getting off of buses, everybody, everyone. It would be like out of On the Beach. You'd just suddenly raise the periscope and there wouldn't be a living soul. Every Christian soul would...
All right, Doug, you made your point, okay? She's ugly.
No, but she's not just ugly. She's straight. And there's something about an ugly straight woman, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, it's almost like saying, hi, I'm white, so I get to sit at this lunch counter, and you don't, you're black, and the white guy that gets to sit at the lunch counter
weighs 300 pounds. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, that guy is a gay man's gay journalist. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Mr. Dangler. That makes sense about what you just said.
Who's talking now?
This Bud Dickman.
All right, so you understand what I'm saying, huh, Bud?
I do, yeah, because, you know...
Oh, hold on for a minute. My name's not Dangler, though. Okay?
Yeah, his name, you just got his name all messed up.
I'm sorry, you mean I what a name?
My name is Doug. Have you told these people what my name is?
Doug, his name is Doug Danger, Bud.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
Well, the name is Doug Danger, or the name is Doug Dangler, but we still have this problem, and that is you degrading women. And now you're saying that because she's straight, she is doubly ugly. Is that what you're saying?
No, ma'am, I'm not saying because she's straight, she's doubly ugly, but I'm saying that unlike the people... Can you hold on for just a second? Are you going up to Presidio? Are you going to Presidio? Where's this bus stop? I gotta take the bus, Phil.
Hold on for a minute. We'll be right back with Doug Danger as we talk about San Francisco's ban on public nudity that is supported by the gay community and is being protested by a bunch of straight nude people. It's very weird, but it's San Francisco. We'll be back to talk more about it here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Man, just a Dangler, hold on, okay?
You call me Dangler one more time, man. I'll come up there.
Gotta hold on.
Danger is his name.
Well, tell that kid my name is Danger. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. You know that? You know that kid?
Yeah.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Bill Henry.
Really? Hey, welcome back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Phil Henry here with Doug Danger, Margaret Gray, as well as Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. Margaret, you were making a point here. And, Doug, I want to get back to talking about the public nudity ban in San Francisco, which, Doug, you're commenting because you are a gay man and a gay journalist.
And again, Phil, I want to, and thank you for pointing out, I want people who are tuning in for the very first time, I don't want anybody to think that because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist that I like commenting necessarily on gay issues. It's a common mistake to say, oh, well, Doug's a gay man, a gay journalist, so let's go get him about a gay issue. I called Phil and I said, well, I got something to say about this.
That's true, yeah.
And I do. And here's what I got to say about it. Castro is where the man who represents the Castro is a guy by the name of Scott Weiner or Scott Weiner, something like that.
Weiner.
Shut up, man. But what is it with you?
You know, if I hear one more word out of that.
All right, I'll take care of it.
Senator, I thought it was funny.
If I hear one more word out of you, man. Okay?
Yeah.
So anyway, this guy's Scott Weiner. There, you want to laugh now? I don't think so. Scott Weiner, this guy, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? And I don't mess. And what that means is this. If you're some heterosexual, you think the whole thing is a running joke, and you want to make some jokes about it, hey, step up and joke me, okay? Joke me. I'll talk to you about it. Because I'll tell you what, I go natural. I pick up a baseball bat. And
all right, Doug, take it easy, man. Come on, the kid said he was sorry.
I'm just pissed off because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. They come looking for me every time there's a gay issue. And I saw that on your Facebook page, too. I see all these people saying, hey, why don't you ask Doug about this, that, this, that, this, that. And let me tell you something, all you Facebook people over there on the Phil Henry fan page, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. That doesn't mean I know all about gay politics. In fact, I probably know more about heterosexual items and heterosexual practices and heterosexual news and heterosexual people than half the straight people on that fan page here. So, you know...
All right, Doug, you've made your point. Can we get back to this?
Well, what I was going to say is that the gay people in the Castro are not... They don't like seeing this public nudity any more than anybody else. And I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Okay? Okay, Mr. Henry?
Yes, I understand.
What are you getting all tense for?
Because you're sitting here, man. You know, you're picking on Bud. You're talking about my listeners.
I'm not picking on Bud. That's the guy that said, Wiener, You heard him say that, right?
Yes, I did, and we've chastised him, and we've set him in his place, and let's move on. So, what you're saying, and this is a very good point, and I think it needs repeating, that the people that support this ban, sponsored by the city supervisor representing the Castro District of San Francisco, are gay people, as well as many people around the city.
Exactly, because if you're gay, that doesn't mess, you know, you don't support public nudity automatically any more than you would if you're straight. And if you have kids or there are children in the neighborhood, whether you're gay or straight, you don't want to be standing there looking at some nude guy walking down the street while kids are going to school. I wouldn't want to see that, and nobody would. I don't think anybody that's decent would. And so the support for this is coming from the gay community. Now, who are the people that want the support for the ban, I should say?
Right.
Now, who are the people that are against the ban? A bunch of straight people like this gypsy town and a bunch of straight freaks that come in and... Just let me say what I'm saying, Phil.
Well, I take exception to this, calling us straight freaks. I happen to know Carolyn Otter. I happen to know Mandy Bodolin. You know these names, right?
Yeah, I know who they are.
All right. These are all people that live in the East Bay. They're also friends of mine from Mill Valley, the Wheelers, Emerelda and Dean.
Yeah, I know those people, too. They're all a bunch of straight, heterosexual freaks that live out there in the outlying area.
Well, Phil, I take exception to that. These are very influential, artistic people who want to feel free. They want to feel for the first time in their lives, and for the lives of a lot of them, and for the lives of a lot of us, they want to feel the air on every part of them. Now, I know you don't know what that means.
What do you mean I don't know what that means? That's pretty self-explanatory, I think.
No, because there's something more to it than just, it isn't, Phil, if I could tell you, and I know you're, Doug, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean when you say they feel the air on every part of you.
No, I don't mean that in that sense. I mean it in that sense, but in the spiritual and artistic and political sense that friends and others in that group speak of.
Do you know this group called Friends, Phil?
What do you mean, like Quakers?
No, not Quakers.
Well, I'll tell Phil. Friends is a group of we are a group of individuals come together to support feeling the air on every part of me. It is a poem of the soul. You understand?
No, I don't understand. No, I don't.
You know what I'm saying? These people are way out there, and they're getting worse, Phil. I think a lot of them should be for 72 hours at least.
I absolutely resent that. Friends is an organization of people, Phil, that support public nudity. But we don't call it public nudity. We call it feeling it on every part of me. Now, the reason why we've gotten resistance is because when we say on every part of me, we mean every area that air can reach. And that's why we do these public calisthenics. That's why we do stretching.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm saying, Phil. These people take their clothes off, and they do what they call their friends march from the East Bay across the Bay Bridge into San Francisco. And then when they get into San Francisco is when they start these calisthenics. And really what it is nothing more. They call it calisthenics or stretching.
No, we do not call it calisthenics. Phil, we call it yoga. It is a form of stretching.
All right, okay. So, Margaret, you do your stretching or your yoga. But what you're doing, let me ask you a question. What yoga are you talking about, Margaret, that has the individual bend over, grab both buttocks, and pull them apart?
You're kidding me.
No, hold on for a minute. You are really an idiot. You know that?
No, you're is that what your group is doing? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, okay?
We know you're gay, and I support you being gay.
No, I don't think you do. You do this in front of kids, and...
You are really a moron. No, Phil, we don't... The way he described it, that is not what we do.
Well, tell me, is there anything in this yoga that you do...
Man, are you putting me on and bend over and pull it apart?
Hold on, bud.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and talk about this if that gargoyle that you've got over there named Bud...
Well, let's not put down Bud because you're a little tongue-tied here, Margaret.
Hey, there you go, Phil. That's exactly what's going down. She's putting that kid down, okay?
Well, that kid you just a moment ago threatened.
Yeah, I did. I told the kid to shut his mouth or I'd come down there and shut it for him, okay? But that's got nothing to do with the fact that you just called that kid a gargoyle. And a gargoyle is something that lives on the side of a cathedral in France and looks like some kind of a thing from the sewer. It's an H.P. Lovecraft nightmare. Now, I don't think you'd want me to call you that. How about if I called your kid something that come out of an H.P. Lovecraft, like something that H.P. Lovecraft crapped into a toilet and it came back to haunt him? How about if H.P. Lovecraft's own turd came back to haunt him?
All right, I've got to put him on hold because...
What did you just do? I had about a million different comebacks for him.
We're going to get back to Doug. Tell Doug.
Yeah, Mr. I've got him on the phone. Yeah, no, he just put you on hold. Yeah, no, he put you on hold. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, bud. You know, you can just tell him.
Yeah, hold on. What?
Tell him he's on hold.
He knows that.
All right, well, you don't have to yell at him. Give me the phone, Doug. No, I didn't hang up on you, man. We're going into a break. Okay, you want me to? He wants to know, do you know who H.P. Lovecraft is?
Give me the phone.
No, Margaret.
Give me the... Hey, Mr. Danger, hi. It's Margaret Gray. Yeah, you know what? Usually, in fact, I'm going to the toilet right now, and I'll tell you, usually it looks a lot like you. Thank you.
You just hung up on him.
I'm sorry. I'm going to the toilet.
Call him back.
Gonna be mad.
Call him back and tell him that she hung up. We'll be right back, folks. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL. I'm going to the toilet right now, and it usually looks like you. Oh, man.
Truth
now,
is
why,
our
why
bitch.
Why is y'all talking about stuff
the
like
Phil
that?
The Phil Henry Show.
I don't know. Am I on the air? Hold on. You did.
Oh, yeah.
Talking here with Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier on the line with us, and Margaret Gray and Bud Dickman, Robert Leonard also with us here as we discuss the nudity ban in San Francisco. Now, to give you some background, and we've been trying to, so just, Doug, you're there, right?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, we didn't hang up on you.
No, I understand that, but I don't want to avoid the point that I'm trying to make. When I saw this group of, and again, these are straight people, they're suburban straight people, and they're suburban progressive straight people. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? So I'm gay, and that means as a gay man and as a gay journalist, you are not about to... Excuse me for putting it this way. You don't pee down my back, tell me it's raining. It just don't happen. It don't happen to the gay man and the gay journalist. It may happen to you. It may happen to your friend Bud there. It may happen to Robert. It might happen to Ms. Gray. It might happen to a million people a million different times during the day. But it don't happen to the gay man, gay journalist. Now, as a gay man, gay journalist, you don't pee down my back, tell me it's raining.
Right, I got it.
All right.
Okay, and so what?
So what?
So what was the point you were going to make?
You were going to make another point. What was it?
Oh, yeah. It was the people, the friends, that group you're supporting from the East Bay.
The friends come over and we do our yoga. Yes, it is because we want to feel it everywhere. And that, by the way, is what it's not feel it on every part of me. I gotta feel it everywhere is our slogan.
What does that mean, I gotta feel it everywhere?
They want to feel the air.
We want to feel the warmth of the sun in every place. And so we're not bending over and pulling our butt cheeks apart, as this one was laughing at.
Easy, bud.
What a child.
Well, tell me what it is you think you're doing then, because I saw, Ms. Gray, a group of your friends. I haven't seen you, and with all due respect, I don't want to.
What does that mean?
It means I would rather not see you bending over in a neighborhood that I happen to love and respect, pulling your...
No, I haven't, but I do not take kindly to that kind of insult. And
what's insulting about that?
What's insulting about that?
Yeah, you want people to look at it?
I am saying that if I felt it necessary to bend over and spread it, if he's laughing at me...
Get out of here, bud. You laughing too?
Yeah, sort of.
Get out of here.
If I chose to do that, I would hope that people would be... They would enjoy it.
Oh, baby. Woo! You gotta be putting me on, lady. You know?
Yeah, because you're a gay man and a gay journalist, Doug, and because I'm a liberal, and because you and I are politically allies, it doesn't mean that I don't...
That you don't what?
It doesn't mean that on occasion I don't feel like calling you just a... You're a queer.
Oh, you just heard that, Phil. You're a witness. She just called me a queer.
Margaret, where are you going?
I'm going to the toilet.
Yeah, she goes to the toilet, man, every time she gets busted. So you just heard your progressive friend there, Mr. Henry.
Well, you know what? It's kind of what you were saying. I mean, you've got a bunch of people that call themselves progressives, but if you scratch them... I guess deep enough.
Yeah, you scratch them looking deep enough. There's just another reactionary right-wing fascist there. And I'll tell you something. These people that come into San Francisco and they want to nude up, and you can nude up anywhere you want. But if the gay people, and I'm a gay man in a gay church, and I don't like talking about gay issues, but you want me talking about gay issues? I talk gay. But I do the shorthand now. You know that.
You've been doing a little shorthand here this quarter hour.
That's right. Because I want to get to it. I gay man, gay journal, I talk gay. All right? You understand me?
So far.
Okay. I gay man, gay journals, I talk gay. And they go down to gay town. They look gay. They don't look gay. They come in, spread. Gay people everywhere. Okay? I thought you said you understood gay shorthand.
I don't I don't know what that is. Is that something you made up?
It's something that I made up because I want to get to the point. I feel very passionately about certain things, so I invented a linguistic shorthand that I thought maybe you'd understand.
What I heard you say was you're a gay man and a gay journalist, and when you see straight people go into the gay part of town and they're conducting themselves in this manner, it angers you.
Of course it angers me, yeah. It angers me very much. So I support Scott Wiener, and I support this initiative. But as a writer, you know, I got to write objectively. I think writing objectively about this is to say that Gypsy Taub and her nude straight friends coming into the Castro district is vile, vulgar, frightening, scary as hell, sets civilization back light years, sets back people's eyesight light years, would most likely blind any really sensitive man. I'm not straight, thank God. Because if I was straight and I took one look at Gypsy Taub with her clothes off, I'd be blinded. Stone, I would be blinded for life. It would be almost like staring into the sun. So that's my feeling. I gay man, gay journalist, and I talk gay.
All right, Doug, I guess...
What do you think about that?
I think you said it very well. I agree with, you know, I'm all in favor of what the neighborhood thinks. The neighborhood doesn't want it. The neighborhood doesn't want it. Now, one of the things I did hear them say up there is that if most of this public nudity problem, per se, is in the Castro, now they do have certain events that they are going to protect. People can be publicly nude in.
That's right. Beta Breakers is one of them. There's the Folsom Street Fair, I think, where there. That's a very traditional, long-standing event. I think people have taken to, you know, showing up nude at some of these events like Beta Breakers and so on. But this is not an attack on personal expression, Phil. This is simply saying we've got a neighborhood and we want to keep it, you know, a place that is a family-friendly place. And that means kids. And I got a niece and a nephew, okay? And I live in Southern California, but if we were in San Francisco, I was with my niece and nephew who are both 12 and 11 years old, and I take them into the Castro, and there's some dude or lady or whoever walking down the street nude, I ain't going to take very kindly to that. I'm going to tell that person, get some clothes on, or I'll kick your ass around the block for drill. I'm a gay man, gay journalist. And for me to say that gay, that another gay.
You just busted into shorthand.
Sorry, for me to say that to another gay would sound like I hate gays, and I don't.
I know you don't. I know you don't. And I got to agree with you on this. This is one of those rare moments, Doug, where you and I are in total agreement. Anyway, thank you for being with us. Thanks for giving us an overview on this. It looks like it's you know, they're protesting it, but this is the law of the city of San Francisco.
Absolutely, and I want people out there to know that, again, it is supported by the gay people of the city of San Francisco, at least. This whole idea of walking down the street nude, I guarantee you right now the people who are doing that and bending over to spread to get air on, well... It's sick.
It is sick. All right, man. Thanks for... Margaret's back.
Oh, Margaret's back, huh?
Yeah, I came in here to say something. What do you mean it's sick?
Margaret, bending over and spreading your rear end cheeks and saying that that's art, you know...
That is art when you see the beauty in that. F, getting it on me...
What's it called?
It's called... I think it's getting it on me.
Getting it all... Get it all over me.
I know it's not get it all over me. You don't even know what it's called. You're a member of the group.
It's called I Want to Feel It There... I don't know.
The way you're saying it, Margaret, it sounds worse.
What does that mean?
Get it all over me?
Yeah, that sounds pretty bad.
Well, I would think it would sound bad to you, too, because you look for whatever's ugly in something and you make it worse. It's called I Want to Feel It On Me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll bet you do.
Doug, When are you going to be out of your little abode there where you write out in public where I can at least get a shot at you?
Oh, is that a threat?
Maybe.
I tell you what, Margaret, I'm going to be at that little bar, Belmont Shores, you know, a place called Stylo's, that little bar?
Yeah, I know the place.
I'm going to be there tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. You go ahead, you walk right up. You step right up to the plate.
You know what? You're on.
Okay, it'll be a good fight.
Oh, yeah. It won't last long, I'll tell you that.
Oh, would you grow up, both of you?
No. She wants to... No, let me tell you something. You want to skin that smoke wagon? You go right ahead.
Oh, okay, Wyatt Earp.
Okay, well, there goes Doug Danger. Are you telling me you meet this guy and you're going to, like, throw down?
Let me tell you something about Doug Danger. His being gay aside, he thinks that he's all this. He thinks he's the big boy on the block.
Well, Margaret, you know, the guy's got an opinion, and I think it's a valid opinion.
Oh, it's a valid opinion. When he takes a wonderful neighborhood artistic group like Friends and the poetry of I Got to Feel It Up...
Up what?
Gotta feel it up there.
That's what I thought it was.
I gotta feel it up there. And you're trying to tell me that Doug's not allowed to laugh at that or have some fun with that?
I don't know if that's the actual slogan.
You know, then if you're going to represent them on the radio, you got to get it right.
Well, I'll have to call Gypsy.
Is this lady Gypsy Taub a member of that?
She's not a member, but she's in an ancillary organ. She's in a support group.
How many? What is this anyway, man? Is it like you've got nudists up there and then you've got support groups for nudists? Does anybody live in San Francisco?
Does anybody live in San Francisco? What does that mean, Phil?
Does anybody in this group, this Friends group with the slogan, I gotta feel it up there?
That's it, Phil. Take something beautiful and make it ugly.
You were about to say you hate me, right?
Yes, I do. I hate you.
Thank you.
She left again.
No, I can see she left. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. More news coming up.
Phil Henry.
We're going to have with us here in a moment a very rare treat, Chef Carl Cedilia, who featured on television and radio for 23 years doing his own recipe show. And most of what Carl Cedilia did was sort of desserts, right?
Yeah, they call it like a confectionery.
Confectionery, yeah.
What's that? They're like you're working with sugar.
Yes, a confectionery is like it's like a candy store.
Yeah, confectionery is... in fact... I was in Carpinteria, California. If you ever out to California, and I'm sure in your neighborhoods, folks, wherever you listen to me, you have your favorite candy stores, but there's a confectionery in Carpinteria, California. Now, Carpinteria is a great little beach city north of the El Pacifico here, north of our broadcast position, north of our broadcast studios. And they are a beautiful little city. And just south of Carpinteria, in fact, before you get into the city, is a seal preserve, and on during the high season when the seals are in that area, it's an amazing thing. But you can see them, they're pups and they're just frolicking, and it's a wild thing.
What's so big about that?
Yeah.
Well, I happen to like nature, okay?
Because seals are, you're not talking about sea lions, you're talking about seals.
Yeah, seals are boring. All they do is just wiggle around in the sand.
Oh, are they boring? Okay, well, I'm sorry. They don't bounce balls off their noses. You're right. They're not the sea lions.
Well, sea lions are like dogs and seals are like cats. In other words, sea lions are fun and friendly, and seals are like cats. You want to throw them in a bag and drown them, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what you want to do with cats?
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did say that. Is that what you want to do with cats?
Oh, well, get you. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Henry has a scoop.
Is that what you want to do with cats, Margaret?
I don't like cats, no.
So you want to drown them?
I don't want to drown no cats. I didn't say that.
I'm not talking to you.
What are you talking about?
You just said that you want to throw seals into a bag and drown them because that's what you'd want to do with cats.
I don't like cats. Leave it at that.
Wow.
Don't look at me like I'm some kind of a psycho.
Well, Miss Gray, that's bad. Now I want to have a little kitty cat.
I don't like cats because they are... I don't like cats because they're disrespectful, they're rude, they think they run things, and they don't.
Why, do more people pay attention to a cat when it walks in a room than you?
Well, don't more people pay attention to a cat when it walks in a room than they do to you?
Probably. I could care less.
Oh, bull crap.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is true. I mean, cat gets most of the...
Yeah, cat gets... People want to look at a cat, but a cat isn't as... It's not as good.
Exactly, Bud. Cats are not as good as people. And I think it's about time someone...
Someone put him in a bag and drowned him.
Listen to you. Someone put him in a bag and drowned him. Boy, you swear to God you're talking about Auschwitz. I'm talking about a lousy, stinking cat.
Margaret, I think you need help. You know that?
I think you need help.
No, I think anybody that is inhumane to an animal needs help. Anyone that would harm an animal that way is a walking psychopath.
You better apologize for that.
Apologize for what? You're the one that said you want to drown cats.
I didn't. All I said was I resent the fact that cats walk around like they're something special just because they bury their dung. Big deal. We flush it. We people. Do you understand what I'm saying, Phil?
Yes.
Oh, see, he's ladies and gentlemen, you can't see him. He's looking at me like I've lost my mind.
Well.
Let me ask you a question. What do you do? I go to the toilet because I value the toilet. Do you know why? Because that's something we made as people. You flush it. I admire the toilet. I look at it as it operates. Now, a cat thinks it's something special because it craps and then buries it. If I did that, I'd be arrested. Can you imagine if I went out right now outside of these studios? All right?
Okay.
What are you looking at?
Are you about to tell me?
You went to dug a hole and took a dump in it?
Are you lousy?
Ow!
What, you just hit him for no reason. Why'd you hit him?
Because of the smart mouth on it.
I didn't do anything. You're the one talking about go outside, dig a hole.
Would you stop with the shorthand, okay?
What do you mean?
You're the one talking about go outside, dig a hole. If I went outside, Phil, and I said to you, I need to go use the toilet, and I went outside, and you walked out, and you saw me digging a hole, are you going to laugh again?
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. And you know something, Phil? I'll let you know when the hell shuttle arrives.
Yeah, let me know when the hell shuttle arrives.
Go to hell.
She will talk about if she was outside.
She's talking about if I think the question...
Here, I'll do it. I can...
I thought you left.
I'll do it. If I walked outside and I saw myself... No, if you walked outside and you saw yourself...
Digging a hole?
Yes, digging a hole to crap in. No, if you walked outside and you saw me digging a hole and then I squatted over it, dropped one... And then wiped and good, and I got up and I looked at you all proud of myself. What would you think? Good night.
Well, you can't leave, Margaret. That's not part of the deal.
Well, what do you want me to stay here so you can laugh at me?
Yes.
Fine.
What you just said there, Margaret, that is better than anything that's the funniest thing I've heard in years.
Why?
Why? If I walked outside and I saw you digging a hole and then you crapped into it, I'd call...
The Nut House.
Of course I would. Of course I would. You would expect nothing less of me. What kind of a man would I be if I didn't immediately get on the phone and call a nut wagon?
You gotta call a nut wagon to see somebody like that.
And yet you wouldn't call the nut wagon on a cat.
No, I'm not gonna call a nut wagon on a cat because I don't expect a cat to use a toilet or to buy toilet paper.
Well, of course, but you don't expect to see a cat driving a car. And yet, wouldn't you be proud of your cat if it could?
Would I be proud of my cat if it could drive a car?
Yes.
I would think that I had some kind of a freak of nature on my hands. I'd probably call the university or a zoologist. I don't know if it would be pride. I would try to protect the animal because it would be very special. Okay.
Well, so what? Are you going to protect me if I dig a hole and dump into it? Excuse me for saying, I'm sorry.
Margaret, I'm telling you, you know, I don't know what's going on with you.
Phil, I'm trying to make... You're the one that said I hated cats. And I'm telling you, I don't hate cats, but I don't like the things they do. I think they...
They don't think their stuff smells.
Exactly.
Know why?
Why?
Because they bury it.
Yeah! Give me five, man. Yeah, just get out of here. Give me five. You brought it on yourself, all this talk about, hey, cats are taking a dump and they're burying it and they think there's something special. Cats are by nature that kind of an animal. If you can't get into a cat's vibe, and a lot of people are really strange, you know, a lot of people, human beings that don't like cats really disturb me because you can say, well, hell, there's certain animals that I can't get close to. I understand that, you know. There's certain animals that are, by, you know, maybe they're visually, they're not appealing. They're not very affectionate. Some people are really into lizards. They're into reptiles, you know. And reptiles are, I don't even know what kind of consciousness a reptile has. Is it aware of other beings around it, I suppose? But does it have the same sort of sense of other creatures like a mammal does? Who knows? But some people really like lizards. They like snakes. And they enjoy that vibe, you know. But I may not, but it doesn't mean I want to kill snakes. As a matter of fact, I a lot of snakes are beautiful to me, you know.
What about rattlesnakes?
Rattlesnakes are dangerous, but king snakes are cool. King snakes are beautiful brown and yellow snakes, and they're our friends, and they kill rattlesnakes. Rattlesnakes are dangerous. What are you going to do? I mean, so are cougars, so are lions, so are a lot of mammals that are dangerous. But I don't want to just drown them because they're, you know, they're not fun to pet. Or because they're not jumping in my lap and being my friend. I mean, that is, anybody that's got a problem with cats, because cats are not as friendly as dogs, man, drown yourself first. That'd be a real good solution.
I agree with that.
Instead of drowning a cat, just put yourself in a freaking bag. I'd be happy to throw it in the water. I mean, the cruelty to an animal on any level is sickness that, in my opinion, entitles a human being that practices it to a prison cell for a long time, but... particularly if you don't like cats, you know, you don't like cats, you don't like cats. We were talking about seals, weren't we?
Yes, you were talking about the seals up at Carpinteria.
Right. So you see, this is another example of what I'm talking about. This is the meeting that we had the other day.
Yeah.
I said, every time I start to talk about something, you clowns get off on something else. And the next thing I know, I'm talking about, I wanted to talk about a candy store in Carpinteria. And I wind up talking about throwing a cat in a bag into the ocean, you know.
Well, you're the one that talked about that.
No, I'm not. You did. I didn't bring that up at all. Anyway, the confectioner up in Carpinteria, California, I highly recommend you go and visit them. I don't know the name of the store, so it's not like I'm, you know, I'm not giving a plug here. I can't remember the name of the thing, but it's a beautiful candy store, and man, makes me want to drive up there right now as soon as we get off the air at 1 a.m., and I don't even know if they'll be open. Chances are they won't be open, so I'll be driving through the darkened streets of Carpinteria. What is open in Carpinteria after 1 a.m.?
Probably like is the Spot.
The Spot. That's a great burger joint in Carpinteria. The Spot. No, they're not going to be open.
What about that steak place?
There's a steakhouse up there that you can cook your own steak, and they also have a band, and you can dance. No, I don't think that that's... I don't think anything's open. But first thing tomorrow morning...
Are they open on Thanksgiving?
I don't know. I don't. What is open on Thanksgiving? There's certain places that should be open on Thanksgiving, but I don't know. Now, you may see on Phil TV and HD, we had up this the story about mediation fails to save Twinkie Maker Hostess. Now, everybody is all of a sudden a Hostess fan. These guys are going out of business because people wouldn't eat, that people would rather eat their own you-know-what than eat Hostess. That's about what, that's why, you know.
Well, it ain't that bad.
It isn't? Hostess is going out of business because nobody wanted to eat the swill what they make.
Yes, but now they do.
Now they, no, they don't want to eat it.
Yeah, they do. It's selling, it's going like hotcakes.
Bud, the reason why it's going like hotcakes is because people are collecting this crap.
They're collecting it? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about they're collecting this, and it's like a key, it's not a keepsake. They think it's going to be worth something. Stuff is going off the shelf. But anyway, bankrupt Hostess said late yesterday that last-ditch negotiations with its baker's union to salvage the 82-year-old maker of Twinkies, Ho-Hos, and Ding Dongs were unsuccessful. A bankruptcy judge had ordered Hostess executives and union leadership to enter a one-day mediation session before he could agree to liquidate the company. Barring a miracle, Hostess will also, which also makes Wonder Bread and Drake's Cakes, neither one of which I eat. And I'm not saying it's a bad product. Obviously, people just, they ain't into it, man. Let me see if I can get this up on the screen behind me so that people can see this. I think I can. Well, let's see. Nope. Can't do it. Yeah, I can. There it is. Anyway, barring a miracle, Hostess, which also makes Wonder Bread and Drake's Cakes, is expected to ask a judge today for permission to sell off its assets at an 11 a.m. hearing in White Plains, New York. So,
what did they sell?
They sold their assets.
What? Assets.
What's that?
Stuff they have.
What do you mean the stuff they have? Are they selling Ding Dong?
They're not selling Ding Dongs. They're selling the...
Oh. But they're selling, when they say their assets, they're selling the ovens, the buildings, the offices, I don't know, whatever they own, you know.
But if they sold Ding Dong, that's the whole thing.
They ain't gonna, what do you think, they're out there on the street selling Ding Dongs? That's not their asset. They couldn't sell enough Ding Dongs. That's the problem.
Yeah, what do you think they sold on Twinkie, though?
I don't know. I don't care. Hostess said Friday it had no choice but to shutter 33 plants and lay off 18,000 workers following a crippling strike by its bakers. Here is where we get into, and everybody buys the propaganda. I love it. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. I just think it's just a fantastic moment in American propaganda, business propaganda. Every single solitary time, it's the same damn thing. Had to shutter because of the union. Had to shutter because of the union. Went out of business because of the union. And everybody buys it.
Bad. What do you think it is?
Yeah, if it's not a union.
Well, this is all I'm saying is, yes, Hostess had no choice but to shutter because of their baker's union. You know, if the bakers would have cut their wages, if the bakers would have worked for less money, but, you know, we don't know what the details were on their negotiations with the so-called baker's union. We don't even know if the bakers had rejected a pay cut. Maybe the bakers were striking on the basis of something even more more fundamental than a pay cut. Maybe they were striking the fact that they wanted to strip their medical coverage away from them. Or maybe they had already given up given back some of their salary, shall we say. And maybe they wanted more. I don't know. But the first thing that we get here, not two or three paragraphs in, is, well, the reason why is because of the union. The company filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy in January, blaming mounting debt and rising labor costs. Yeah, of course. How about this? Is there any mismanagement in there at all?
Well, you can't say.
Margaret, what happened to the liberal? You know, what happened to Mrs. Oh, we got to take a break. Okay, maybe we should.
Yeah, you get in a bunch of stuff's only going to piss people off.
Well, that's true. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. As we take a look at the bakers and those bastards, those lousy bakers and the tinkers and the tailors and the sailors that have caused bankruptcy. But
the name of a good movie.
It was the name of a good movie.
Well, that was taken. Well, there was a soldier and a sailor.
No, it was a soldier and a spy.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, I'm here with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman and Margaret Grace. So, do you understand, essentially, my point is that even if Hostess says the union sucks, and that's what they're saying that the union is causing them to shut down.
Yeah, they also said it's like mounting debt and everything.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they said mounting debt and the union. And I love how they always throw the union in there. Every single company that goes out of business, if there's a union somewhere within striking distance, if there's a union somewhere within the universe, within the galaxy, some place that they can reach out and touch, aha! There's a union that did it!
Well, I agree with you, Phil. I know that they're making excuses, but I don't understand the business end of it. And the fact that I like... Now, did you have Chef Carl Cedilia coming on?
We do. We have Chef Carl Cedilia coming on here in a few minutes, but I just wanted to make this point.
Well, I wanted to hear what he had to say about the Twinkie and about particularly the Hostess pie. You know what I mean, Robert?
Oh, man, the Hostess Pie, man. The Hostess Pie is the finest pie that has ever been made. Ever been made.
What do you mean? Which one?
What do you mean, which one?
Well, which pie? The pie.
I love the cherry pie. I love...
Weren't you talking, Phil, about the Hostess Pie?
The Hostess Pie was delicious. I loved it.
Aha! So there was one what you thought was good.
Oh, big wow, bud. You're trying to tell me that, hey, look at the big discovery that Bud made. Phil likes Hostess. I didn't say I don't like Hostess.
Yeah, well, you said you thought a ding-dong looked like it dropped out of a cat.
I didn't say a ding-dong looked like it dropped out of a cat.
I did. I'm the one that said that.
You did? Okay, fine. Boy, you got a problem with cats, don't you?
Wait, hold on for just a minute. Just because I said a ding-dong looks like something a cat would bury, why does that mean I hate cats?
I guess it doesn't, but... all right, let me get Carl Cedilia on the line here. And Chef Carl is, of course, as I mentioned to you guys, he had a longstanding program here on radio as well as television, and very, very popular guy. He joins us here on our Newsmaker line now from Hershey, Pennsylvania. Hey, Chef Cedilia, how are you, sir?
I'm very grateful to be on your show. And I was looking at the Hostess, and I wanted to come on and tell you. And the first thing I was going to tell you is I love that Hostess pie.
You like the pie?
Oh yeah, love it. Barbara, how are you,
Chef Carl? I'm very happy to talk to you again. Which of the Hostess cakes and the creams did you like?
Well, I have to say, I've always loved. And the Twinkie, of course, everybody's going to talk about Twinkie. But the one that I always loved was the Ding Dongs. And what was the one that Dan Dogcraft was talking about?
What were you talking about, Dan? The ones that had the chocolate that squirted in the mouth? The chocolate zingers.
Yes. Thank you, Dan. Chocolate zinger. And I used to love those, but I wouldn't eat them. And the reason why I would never eat them, and I loved them, but I couldn't eat them in public.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you.
I know why. It's the same reason why. Well, a woman wouldn't have a problem eating those in public.
What?
What are these called?
They're called a chocolate zinger. Never heard of a chocolate zinger?
No.
Chocolate zingers were made by Hostess. They were delicious, and they had a chocolate filling. But when you bit into them, it was squirted into your mouth. And as a man, I couldn't abide, I couldn't risk being caught eating that and smiling. And,
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah, you see what I mean? You see what he means?
No, I don't. I think it's childish.
Well, that's why I put a chocolate zinger on the plate.
So you couldn't risk eating a chocolate zinger in public as a man because it's, when you bit into it, it squirted chocolate?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Chef, we got to go. Thank you for being with us.
You gave me 5 lousy minutes, you cheap creep.
All right, we'll be back with more on the other side. The world famous Phil Hendry Show. Enough with Hostess.
Phil.
Enough
Hendry.
With it.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
I think you guys better start that again.
Right.
No, honest line. No, start it all over again. Start it all over again, okay? Hi, guys. Welcome to the show. And apparently Bud and Robert didn't have their act together, so it's the Iron Swine theme, okay?
Yeah, what happened?
What happened was we couldn't hear it because we had the lineup. Chef Cedilia's factory was working there or something. I don't know what the hell happened. So you ready?
Yeah, go.
And now it's time for Iron Swine. And Iron Swine today, you got a call from the Twinkie, from a Twinkie shop.
Ring, 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 ring.
Yeah, hey, is this Iron Swine?
Yeah, what's up?
I got Chef Carl Cedilia here. He's going to eat a Twinkie. He eat one more Twinkie, and he's going to explode. I swear to God, the man will explode, and then I'm going to have a damn mess on my hands, you know.
Uh-oh, Chef Carl Cedilia is going to eat a Twinkie. I got to go I gotta get him to stop eating a Twinkie.
Yeah. And so Iron Swine got in the Iron Swine car, come down to Twinkie to like a Twinkie factory.
Hey, Chef Carl Cedilia, what are you doing?
Well, I thought I'm gonna have a Twinkie. I thought I had one.
Don't eat it. Don't eat the Twinkie. You're gonna blow.
Oh, nobody can stop me have a Twinkie. I want to have it.
No, you fool!
Hey.
Chef Carl Cedilia just blowed himself up because he had a Twinkie.
Too bad, Chef.
I want to have a Twinkie.
But you can't have a Twinkie now. You're blowed up.
Oh, okay. Now can I have a Twinkie, Simpson?
Yeah, you can have a Twinkie now since the Iron Swine's over.
Thanks, Chef.
Great.
I didn't know he was in town.
Yeah, he was right around the corner.
Oh, he was right around the corner. I thought he was in his chef factory.
No, apparently he was at the mall.
What was he doing at the mall?
Probably getting... What are you doing at the mall, Chef?
I was just picking up some sugar.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. All right, so that sucked.
Why'd that suck?
I don't know. It just didn't... the bomb explosion thing, man. You guys were using something from Afghanistan. Sounded weird. All right. Welcome back here. That was Chef Carl Cedilia in a rare appearance on Iron Swine as he eats an extra Twinkie and blows up. Boy, I'll tell you, the fat jokes, man.
Well, I think the fat jokes work.
Well, you're the king of the fat jokes. You're the guy that started all of that.
I didn't start. What do you mean I started all? I didn't start fat jokes.
Well, you're the one that took it to the extreme with the exploding fat people.
No, I did not. No, Monty Python is the one that did the ultimate fat. Monty Python did the ultimate fat guy when they had that guy eat the mint in, I forget which movie. What movie was it? No, it wasn't Holy Grail. It was Meaning of Life or something. And did you guys see it?
Uh-oh.
And it's famous because they got this fat guy and he says, I swear to God, if I eat one more thing, I'm going to explode. Or I forget what it was. He eats a mint and then just projectile vomits for about 10 minutes in the movie. So.
Oh, that's really funny.
Hey, Margaret, you're the one that said I invented the fat guy. I know I didn't. Monty Python did that like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So, all right. It was even more than the throwing up puppet in Team America. Anyway, welcome back. And I don't know what the hell we're doing. It's the final hour. All kinds of news on about all kinds of things. But I was just noticing this. This might be. I don't know. For some reason, I've always enjoyed newspapers. And I mean, I really have always enjoyed newspapers. I know that newspapers are out of fashion to some extent. I think they're a bit of a nostalgia item for a lot of people, and I get that. I think that if we read newspapers at all, yes, we read them online. If, in point of fact, we even know what a newspaper is anymore. You know, there's a whole generation of people that won't know what a newspaper is. We have a generation coming up now of kids born, say, in the last, even since 2000, kids that are adolescents, who are vaguely familiar with newspapers, but it won't be anything that in 50 years anybody's going to have any real working memory of. Think about that, you know?
Kind of like what you were saying about, like, when your mom said.
What I was saying about when my mom said.
Yeah, what are you talking about, bud?
When his mom was talking about, like, what your mom said.
What did my mom say, man?
About your mom.
What about my mom?
You said what she said.
Well, what did she say? Because I don't remember.
I don't remember. You just seen your mom said something about it.
You know something, man? You gotta be a world record breaking idiot. What are you talking about when you said that my mom said something about what?
About what you're talking about.
About something that existed when she was a kid that doesn't exist anymore?
Yeah.
Well, what was it, man?
I don't know. I forget.
Well, what's the point of bringing it up, bud, if you don't remember what it is?
Just the thing, when Phil said his mom said something about that she had what they don't have no more.
What I said, she was talking about, my mother said one time, she talked about a lot of stuff they had when they were kids that they don't have anymore. She talked about a lot of stuff. My dad, too. I know what they had. They had, in those days, I'll tell you one that I heard my father-in-law, my ex-father-in-law, talk about. That nobody has any memory of except his generation. And it was going to the corner bar with a bucket
to have the guy fill it up with beer.
What?
I swear to God. Now, this might be something that is strictly a German thing, because my father-in-law, Al, was raised by German immigrant parents. He was born in the United States, but his family was German. His parents spoke German at home, and it was his first language as a kid. That was the language that was spoken in their home. So only after he got into school and became, you know, familiar with, you know, and started to associate with the kids in the neighborhood, etc., did he begin to speak English. But German was his language. But he would say that oftentimes his father or his mother would send him down to the corner tavern and have them fill the bucket that he had with beer.
Well, so they were drinking the beer out of a bucket.
Well, I don't know what they did with it. They might have refrigerated it or put it on ice, but that's how you got your beer. I mean, you didn't go to the store in some neighborhoods. You didn't go to the store and buy a six-pack or necessarily get a... I guess in those days you just bought big bottles of it. When did the six-pack start? Does anybody know?
Yeah, I'd like to know about that. As much beer as I drink, you know.
Yeah, I like to have some suds occasionally, but I'd never imagine the world won't have no six-packs in it.
Well, I don't know. We don't drink beer. Frank doesn't. He drinks scotch. I like my sherries, of course. Do you know what sherry is, Bud?
Nuh-uh.
Well, it is like wine, except it's sweeter. I don't really know what sherry is either, but I like it.
You drink sherry?
Yes.
I tell you, man, I can't stand that stuff.
Well, Phil, we're not talking about guzzling it on a Friday night. It's something you have after dinner.
I understand what sherry is. What do you mean, guzzle on a Friday night?
That's the only reason why a man would know anything about sherry. Let me ask you something. Did you ever drink sherry?
Did I ever drink? Yeah, I'm sure I've had sherry.
No, but did you drink it to get drunk?
I don't ever remember sitting down and cracking a bottle of sherry and saying, oh, I think I'm going to get hammered. No. I think I had a sip of some. I don't think I would ever, I would never order it. I would never drink it as a rule. It does, for all intents and purposes, sound like strictly a female drink, and I don't mean anything by this, Margaret, but it sounds like an old lady drink.
Yeah, no kidding.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, Margaret, I mean, come on, you know.
What does that mean?
Margaret, I'm not saying you're an old lady, but it sounds like an old lady drink.
Yeah, it sounds like an old lady gonna drink that.
You said you never even heard of sherry.
I said I heard about it, but I don't think anybody that I know would ever drink it.
You don't know any old ladies?
No.
I do. I knew old ladies that drank it. My aunt drank it. And when my mother was old, she drank it. Okay?
Well, I drank it, and I'm not an old lady.
Fine. Fine. I'm not saying that you are. It reminds me of old ladies, sherry. But the point I'm making here is that when they were kids, that's what they did. That's what Al said that they did. They'd go down and get beer in a bucket. I don't know when the six-pack came around. My mother, I just remember now, Bud, when my mom said, the ice wagon. Is that what I was talking about?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you said it. Your mom, they went out and got ice?
Yeah, that's what they had to get was ice. They had the guy with the ice wagon would come down the street, and they'd have to go out and get ice, and they would put that in the ice box, which was what they kept things cold in. I mean, they there was literally an ice box in those days. That's why a lot of times I'll say to people, put it in the icebox, and I they'll look at me like, where'd you come up with that word? I grew up with that word. I mean, the icebox has always been the refrigerator. I mean, every time I look at the refrigerator, but my folks called it the icebox because when they were kids, that's what they had. It was a box with ice, you know. Did you ever watch The Honeymooners?
Yeah.
Well, that thing that Ralph and Alice had?
That's an icebox?
Yeah, that's why they had a tray under it.
That's why they had that tray under it, yeah, because the ice would melt. All right, and the icebox is something that is, like, strictly from the first half of the 20th century. It's not anything that anybody with, I mean, I think it went out of fashion, but people still, poor people still had it into the 40s. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. What's up with Walmart, man? Are they going out on strike on Friday? I hope so. I'm in favor of that. I'm in favor of that. I'd like to see people just slow it down and chill it out. And you know what, Walmart? You can go and make your money on another day because... that whole exhibition on Black Friday is starting to make me sick. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
right, welcome back here on the Phil Hendry Show. And my good friend, my close personal friend, Mr. Dan Northcraft, has sent me a link here, and I was gonna try to get it up on our Phil TV and HD screen. I'm not sure if I can, but this does tell us a little bit here about beer and the six pack, and it's from a site called the 11th Hour Friday Beer Blogging Six Pack Edition is the name of the article, but the writer is it goes into some detail, and it's very good stuff. It's from a site called the 11th Hour. The six pack came about in the 30s.
Back then they called it six-pack.
And the reason why they called it a six-pack is that the beer makers in the 1930s reasoned that six bottles of beer was about the most a woman could carry home from the market. So why is the basic unit of beer packaging the six-pack? Where did that standard come from? So the actual decision, the six-pack, was invented... It's still a point of contention. There's a lot of different answers to this. Pabst was the first brewery to package beer in six-packs. After numerous studies, it was determined that six cans was the ideal weight for the average housewife to cart home from the store. Remember that in the 40s, things were different from today. Whatever that means. I'm just quoting the writer here. Yes, things were different in the 40s, but maybe it was because of the way that we viewed women or what the women were able to carry. Nonetheless, that was the first time that a six-pack was created. And like I said, my father-in-law grew up in a German part of Chicago, and it was very much the neighborhood. It was not suburban. It wasn't going to the grocery store with mom. It was, it was walking down to a tavern to get your beer. So they decided that that's how they'd make it. This is cool. The dumbest way of carrying a six-pack. What the hell?
That's the stupid site.
All right, anyway. So what else we want to do? All right, and welcome back to the show. All right, I want to give a little shout-out and a plug-a-rooski and all that stuff to our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com, where you can go and get a backstage pass. And a backstage pass would afford you the opportunity to, for instance, watch us on Phil TV in HD, which is what we're doing right now. We are on, you know, on our little TV screen set thing. You can also listen to the live streaming of the Milwaukee Lion games. You can get downloads of those games, downloads of our shows, downloads of our archives, which go back over a decade. And truly the greatest radio show in the history of radio we have in our archives. And we also do a podcast, which is available on iTunes, gives you a little sample of what we have available in the archive. I don't know how much longer we're going to do the podcast, by the way.
What? You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Well, Phil, people love the podcast.
Well, people love the podcast, but the fact of the matter is, this is where we make our living, right here. And so the podcast is a way of promoting, but it's not necessarily going to go on indefinitely. You know, it's all about making money. Sports fans, it's all about making... We don't give nothing away, you know.
Well, I mean, everybody knows it's supposed to be free.
No, not everybody knows it. What are you talking about, supposed to be free? Ain't nothing free. Free. So our podcast is out there. Now, obviously, we are, we're going to have our podcast sponsored, and that's always a consideration. But our website is where the money is made. Not even the radio show. Not even this radio show that you're listening to right now. This radio show doesn't even come close to making the money that our website makes. Doesn't even scratch the surface. Doesn't even get anywhere. And we've been doing this radio show. We took that break for a year. Yeah, sure, but we did.
Yeah, but what are you saying?
Well, read my lips, bud. What am I saying? I'm saying that where is it at in today's economy? What is driving today's media? Where's the money? What's going on? I'm going to tell you. I'm going to say it as clear as I can. I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm not trying to offend. I'm just going to tell you right off, okay? If there's anybody in the radio press that wants me to repeat this again for the 9 millionth time, if there's anybody in the legitimate press that wants me to repeat this again for the 9 millionth time, if there's anybody who hosts a radio show that hasn't gotten the word yet, if there's anybody who is anybody doing a podcast, they already know this is true. If there's anybody anywhere that doesn't has not yet gotten the reality of what's happening in the world today, let me just give it to you straight up. You ready? You ready?
Yeah.
This radio show, and I would dare say it would be true of others, but I don't know how other guys make their living. Radio doesn't make a dime. Not a dime. The money that I make with my website and other business that I do. The radio show doesn't make dime one. This is like, for instance, if my income was a beach ball, the radio show would be a BB.
Well, you can't say it's that extreme.
I absolutely can say it's that. Let me put it to you this way. If I had to rely upon the income from the the income generated from just the radio show, if I had to rely on that to live, I'd starve to death. I'd die. I'd be thrown out of my house. My house would be foreclosed on, and I would not eat, and I would die. Is that clear enough?
Well, you're probably exaggerating, right?
I'm not exaggerating.
Well, I mean, you're just exaggerating to make a point.
No, I'm not exaggerating to make a point. No, I'm not.
So what are you saying?
Oh, my God. Spit it out. I'm spitting it out, man. I'm spitting it out. How much more?
You're saying that the money generated the advertising on this radio show
wouldn't pay for tap water. It doesn't pay for anything. It's useless. I could give it to charity. I should give it to charity, although the charity would still go broke. You understand? The income, the real money, the real money, the money. In other words, I flew back to Washington, D.C. to visit my friend who was having surgery. I flew first class on Virgin Airlines. I stayed at the Ritz-Carlton in Georgetown. Now, the reason why I was able to fly first class on Virgin America and stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Georgetown is because I earn a fat income from my website and my other business interests, such as voiceover, such as acting, etc. All right? The radio show that I do here that people are listening to me now in America on, this thing is whatever you want to call it. It's a way for you to listen to me, and that's great, and I'm glad that you do. But the money that this show generates, the money that is, I should say, generated for this show, the advertising dollars that are generated for this show wouldn't pay for a suit. They wouldn't. It wouldn't make enough money for me to pay the electric bill. Now do you get it?
It's still a little, I think I'm not clear. You're saying that it wouldn't,
you're saying it doesn't make a lot of money.
You must be the stupidest people I've ever talked to in my life. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Okay? All right, so in any event, having said all of that, why the hell do I got to spend all this time?
It just doesn't seem likely, Phil.
Well, you know what, man? That's because you're living in another world. You're living in another world. You and a whole lot of people like you. You think that it's business as usual. The world has changed. Media has changed. Where the money is has changed. Radio doesn't make any money for anybody. It is a... I don't know what they're doing. I think it's still making money for the suits. You know, those guys, they'll rob their way right to their graves. But the rest of us, man, we've got other jobs. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
I wish you'd get that disgusting picture.
What disgusting picture?
The one you have on the screen right now.
That's the best picture it's ever been.
That's a picture of Michelle Bachmann sucking down that corn dog. We can't ever take that picture down. That's fantastic.
I think it is vile, and I think it's an insult to women.
Why do you think that?
I think it's an insult to women, and I don't want to...
You don't want to what?
I don't want to have to explain. I don't think I should.
Margaret, I understand how you think it's insulting to Ms. I would understand that. But it's a funny picture. Folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, this picture is about a year old. It was before the president, obviously the presidential election. I don't know how old the picture is. It was back when Michelle Bachmann was still a viable candidate for the Republican nomination, I guess. When was that?
Probably about, well, when? What do you mean?
He's talking about the Republican, I think it was last spring.
Last spring? Okay, it could have been last spring. And it was the picture of, no, it wasn't last spring. It was two summers ago. It wasn't last, it was the summer of 2011.
Why do you say that?
Because she's eating a corn dog, which means that I think she was at some state fair. And I don't think state fairs happen unless it's summertime.
Well, get a load of you, Mr. Detective. Ooh, you're a real detective, aren't you?
Well, Mark, what are you, being a smartass?
No, I think that's very impressive.
Yeah, I think that it was a during the summer, and I believe it was the summer of 2011. I don't think it was this past summer, because by then Romney had it wrapped up, and that looks like the time Michelle Bachmann thought she was all this in a bag of chips, man. She thought she was, remember when Bachmann thought she was a shoe-in?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, she thought she was going to be all elected and everything, wasn't going to happen.
Wasn't going to happen, and she thought she was really something, man. And I knew, you know, it was, see, she's the whole reason, not to go over the election again, but she and people like her, you want to know why Republicans are dead in the water and why today they're sitting there wondering whether they got a party left and whether they don't know what the hell they're going to do and, oh my God, what went wrong and, oh, we got to do better with our message. And, I mean, all of this stuff they could have seen happening. All of it, they could have seen it coming, man. They could have seen it coming right after McCain. All of a sudden, they're doing soul searching. These guys were brain dead from the gate. After they got their ass handed to them with McCain, they should have known then. They should have known then, because we were telling them, if I knew, and I'm not a genius.
Yeah, but you're never going to live down the fact that you thought it was going to be Giuliani.
I picked Giuliani. That's what we're calling him now, by the way, folks, because we can't call him Giuliani because Bud's an idiot.
Yeah, blame me.
Well, you're the one that kept calling him Giuliani, so we...
Yeah, so we're just going to call him Giuliani. I said I thought it was Giuliani and Clinton because I figured that...
Yeah, why did you?
Because I thought it was. I wasn't thinking very critically in those days. I just thought, oh, you know, I know how these things go. It's a slam dunk. I mean, you got to admit, man, the whole Obama thing that came along, it was a revolutionary moment. So when that went down, I realized, well, I was wrong about that. But I mean, my instincts, I may not call the race the right way, and I may not necessarily call Super Bowls the right way. You know, I'm not exactly a guy that is the best, most accurate gambler in the room. But I'm going to tell you something. When it comes to trends, when it comes to historical trends, I am never wrong. Never.
Well, what do you mean by that?
But what I'm talking about right now, the whole attitude of the country toward the Republican message, the Republican slash conservative message, the Tea Party seemed all wrong to me. When the Tea Party first happened in the early part of 2009, when the first rumblings of the Tea Party took place, and I remember we were talking to a guy who was a Tea Party guy, the whole thing seemed absolutely wrong to me. It just seemed, it didn't work, you know. I'm thinking, what is it about this is just not making sense? And because it didn't. It didn't make any sense, given the fact that Obama hadn't been in office 14 seconds, and already there's people pissed off about this, that, something else when it comes to taxes. You know, I understand that people are going to be upset about taxes, but the reaction to Obama seemed out of whack. It seemed over the top, given the fact that the man had obviously won, and he, you know... He wasn't a squeaker like this last one, if you even want to call this last one a squeaker. And it was obviously a major trend in the country away from the Republican leadership that had been provided up to that point. I'm not saying that it was necessarily anti-anything. It was just there was a trend away from it. And now comes this movement of people that claim to be very populist and very widespread, and they're rejecting out of hand all this stuff that's happening, stuff that was endorsed by the Republican leadership, which, of course, was the bailout, you know, the TARP money and everything that was going on with the economy around the meltdown of 2008. And these, here are people who don't seem to get any of that. They just, there's just too much government spending. They were just kind of freaking out about all of that stuff, even though they didn't seem to understand what the world markets were going through and what actually had happened with banks and with these so-called toxic assets and so forth. They just didn't want all this government spending. But then, of course, they wanted to maintain the Medicare. So, you know, and they didn't want the entitlements touched. So it didn't make any sense. So I wasn't buying it. And then along comes this Michelle Bachmann thing, which is the same thing as far as I was concerned. It was the same thing as the Sarah Palin thing. And I am not saying she was a female, so therefore there's a conservative female, and that's got all the, you know, everybody's blood pumping. I'm just saying that whole idea that the real conservative wing of the Republican Party was really the voice of America. That's not what I was hearing. That's not what I was seeing. You know, and Bachmann, even in the Republican Party, is considered to be stupid. I mean, people think she's an idiot. In her own party, they think she's stupid. And there wasn't anybody in the leadership of that party that wanted that woman anywhere near the presidential nomination, just like they didn't want Sarah Palin. Number one, because they knew that they weren't going to win, but number two, they knew they didn't really represent mainstream America. They didn't, you know, but the conservatives think that they do, or they did. They always felt that they were really the voice of America. They always felt that they were it was the great unwashed and the great silent majority and all that bull crap, and they never really got it, man. They just never really understood. No, the country is moving away from that. And so the election takes place, another election, another one that they completely get wrong because they don't know what the hell's going on out there. And with all of the so-called metrics and all of the so-called, I don't know, focus groups and all that crap, and all of the research and all of the polls, and they miss something that's completely fundamentally true, and that is the voter base, the electorate is changing. All of a sudden, these guys magically are getting religion after the election. Well, you know, we have to talk to people of color, and we have to be all-inclusive, and we have to... All of a sudden, within 24 hours, now they know what they did wrong. What the hell took you so long, man? Why did it take why did it take two whole elections for you guys to get that? Two! Not one, two. And now they have this conversation about, well, we need to be all-inclusive, and they're still arguing about it. There's still these imbeciles in that party saying, well, I don't think we're ever not inclusive. We just, you know, that's to say that we didn't. Why don't you just face the facts, man, that, you know, you were not communicating with the overwhelming majority of people that were, you know, the people voting for Obama. I heard a guy say, you know, this idiot O'Reilly, and that guy's about as dumb as it gets. Honest to God, is he stupid. Talk about dumb. O'Reilly is breaking down the election, and he says, now look at this. You know, if you don't think that it was the have-nots voting for Obama, take a look at this. See, it says right here that these people, low-income people, voted for Obama. So why wouldn't they want to have their entitlements and their this and their that? Well, first of all, O'Reilly, you moron, if you break the election down, it wasn't so much the have-nots. It was the minorities, the women, and the young. That's not necessarily have-nots. What you're missing was the minorities, the women, and the young people. Now, Romney, among others, said that Obama was buying off minorities, women, and young. He didn't say anything about low-income people. His research and all of his genius and all of his brain surgeons that were working for him, O'Reilly, they didn't say low-income people. They said minorities, women, and young people, which is even more damaging, albeit truthful in terms of how Romney felt about things. You want to clean things up for Romney, you do it on your own time, man. The fact is, what he said was even more damaging. He said that minorities want to be bought, women want to be bought, and young people want to be bought. Any way you cut it, even if he's got Bill O'Reilly doing all of his press releases for him and writing all of his bullcrap for him, you can't ignore the fact that this guy thinks that the people in this country that want to be bought off are minorities and women and young people. Not good old-fashioned big forehead white guys like you, though, Bill. You got too much integrity for that. You don't want to be bought off. But then minorities now. So that was the whole problem, okay? So, you know, you got a lot of people in that party, man, that, you know, we're, I don't know how many decades we are removed from civil rights. You know that whole thing about how black people don't have to sit in the back of the bus? Don't. And I'm not saying that the bigots and the racists are all conservatives. I'm just saying you guys are going to have to try to get it off the front page.
Now, you know that what you're doing right now is all wrong for AM talk radio.
Absolutely, yes.
You do?
Yes.
Well, then why are you doing it?
Because I don't want to sit here bored to tears. I'm not going to sit here and... what I'm saying right now is an anti-white guy thing. I understand that. And I know that talk radio is white guy radio. But what do you want me to do? You want me to sit here and lie? I'm telling you the truth. I'm educated. Anybody who wants to be educated, I'm laying it on them, okay? I'm not going to pander to anybody.
Well, I don't think that you're...
What?
Do you want me to call Mr. Hall and ask him about it?
No, I don't want you to call Mr. Hall and ask him about it. What the hell is with you, bud?
You got to call Mr. Hall every time. You don't have to call him.
Yeah, but Mr. Hall might want to know about it.
I don't give a crap what he wants to know about. What is it with you, bud? No, you don't have to call Mr. Hall. Now,
But I already did.
Well, you're not... I don't want to put him on the air. So you understand what I'm saying? I don't want to talk to that idiot. So, just don't even put him on the air. Do you understand? Do not put David Hall on the air right now. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, David.
Well, I mean, I told him to put me on. I wanted to talk to you.
What did I just say to you?
Yeah, but...
What did I just say to you?
I told him to put me on, though.
Hold on, David. What did I say to you?
Well, you just put Mr. Hall on hold.
Yes.
Well, I mean, don't be yelling at me. I just asked him if you were going to keep on cutting your throat tonight, or were you going to...
Cutting my throat?
Yeah, well, you're talking all this liberal talk. What do you think this is doing?
Well, I don't... frankly, David, I don't even think you know.
And what's this stuff about how you don't make your living from radio?
I don't.
Well, I mean, it's true, but it's been a tough economy.
Oh, it's a tough economy. Well, I'll tell you what, man, you're the guy that goes out selling this thing, so I tell you what, why don't you just stay home if it's a tough economy? I feel for you, brother. Why don't you stay home and get some sleep?
Nah, don't be a smartass, Phil.
No, I'm not being a smartass if it's a tough economy. Well, why don't you just stay home and get yourself some sleep, okay? And you don't have to go out and pitch.
Well, look, you're making me sound like I'm some lazy slob.
I'm not calling you lazy. I'm calling you... uncreative. I'm calling you unaggressive or non-aggressive. I'm saying that you guys always use the economy as an excuse. You always use the, well, you know, it's a bad economy. You remember what you said to me when we first met?
What?
You said, Phil, I like to under-promise and over-deliver.
That's right. That's my philosophy. I under-promise and over-deliver.
Well, guess what? You not only have under-promised, you've under-delivered, man. So...
Well, that's not fair because... You should have seen me in 2003. And
oh, well, I'll bet you that you were just something else, man, when everything was going great.
Well, I think it's bad for you to come out here and say that, you know, I'm not selling the show.
You're not. You're not. You're this close. Well.
What did you say?
I was going to say you're this close to being fired, but.
Hey, Phil, that's not fair. I called you up to say to you that the reason why I can't sell your show is because you ain't talking enough white guy conservative stuff. Now,
well, no. That's not how the game is played anymore, man. Do you understand? We're a whole new world now, man. Whole new world now. You don't, out there in sales land, you don't tell me what to say and then tell me it'll be easier to sell if you would just say this and that.
Well, what the hell are you doing? You know
what? Get out of here. You're bugging me.
Oh, man, you just hung up on him. Eat it.
I don't care. Giving me all of his problems. Boy, I'll tell you something right now. Do we have to break? Do we have to break, Dan? Because I think we need... I want to get back on the phone with David.
Well, you know, Phil, don't tell him that he's a failure, even though he is, because...
Never mind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah. Look, man, all I'm saying is, if you give me just...
Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
We got Frank?
Yes.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back here. We got Frank Gray on the phone here. Frank Gray, the husband of Margaret Gray. Because we were talking here about Thanksgiving during the break, and I want to get an update. Where are you going, bud?
God, I'm going to my mom's house.
Robert?
Yeah, well, my aunt.
Yeah, you're with your aunt. And Margaret, you and Frank are going where?
Well, we're probably going to visit Frank's sister in Portland, and we'll take Jason J. Delmonico with us. Sometimes we go back to Pennsylvania. We're not going this year. So we'll probably go visit Frank's sister.
Hey, Frank, how you doing?
Hey, young man. I'm better than Custer. How are you?
Good, good. So you guys are going up to Portland?
Yeah, we're going to go there. I mean, you know, my sister lives up there along with his husband, but I don't like the weather up there, you know. But Margaret wants to go, and we'll take Jason J. Delmonico because she's never been. And
just so people know, Frank, can you hold on for a minute?
Say that again?
Can you hold on for a minute?
Yeah.
Frank Gray has gender confusion.
Yes, I was going to tell the audience that, so they're not...
But he doesn't like to hear about it, right?
No, he doesn't. He thinks... All right, Frank.
What are you people talking about, anyway?
Don't worry about it, man. We just... I had to check on something. All right, the reason why I'm asking about Portland is, Margaret, you've been a big fan of Portland's for a long time.
Well, I love Portland. I don't think anyone that's been to Portland doesn't love Portland. It's just, it's fun. It's just a lot of fun.
I personally can't take it up there. I hate it.
You hate it?
Yeah, Frank hates Portland, and he always has hated Portland, but I don't understand why.
Well, you don't understand why. That's great. Let me explain why. I hate Portland because it's a city that claims to be diverse, and yet I don't know what makes it diverse.
Frank, it is diverse in that it is very eclectic.
Yeah, but what does that mean, it's eclectic? What, tell me, I want you to be specific now. We've had this conversation millions of times, but what, be specific now.
It is eclectic and diverse.
What does that mean?
Frank, don't get angry.
No, I'm not going to get angry, but he does this all the time. Every time we talk about Portland, he talks about how it's diverse, and he never... You know, and he never explains why it's diverse. He's always saying it's eclectic. And he's why is it eclectic and why is it diverse?
Frank, don't take that tone with me.
I'm not taking any tone with you, Margaret. I'm asking a question that I've asked 85 million times. And I'm begging you. I'm pleading with you. I get on my knees and I'll beg you. Please tell me. Please. Will you please, honey? What makes Portland, Oregon, so GD diverse and eclectic? The way, you know, you'd say it. He's always going eclectic, Frank. You know how he does it?
Yeah, she...
You called me he.
I'm sorry. She does it a lot on the show.
I'm telling you, Frank, honey, I like it because of the racial diversity.
Right there. Okay, good. Thank you. That gives me something to hang my hat on. There's a place to start. It's like I'm a dying man in the desert, and I need water. And he's finally given me a small cup of water. Something to keep. So you say there's racial diversity. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying cultural, yes.
No. No, no. See, Phil, forgive me, but we have this...
I understand.
We have this discussion. No. You're not going to get away with it this time. Not this time. Like that Scorpio said in that Dirty Harry. When she said to Harry, she says, don't pass on me out. Don't pass out on me now. And I'm not calling you an oinker, honey. Okay?
Well, then watch the comparisons, all right?
All right, I'm just saying, don't pass out on me now. Now, you're not going to get away with that. Okay, you said racial diversity.
Yes, I said cultural.
No, you didn't.
You said racial, Margaret.
Hey, right there, see? Mr. Hendry's backing me up. You said racial. What's the music I'm hearing? I want to stand up, and now I'm standing up, and I'm buttoning my pants, and I don't know why.
It's the end of our show. It's the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Hold on, I want...
Oh, for God's... Is he saluting?
I'm not going to sit there with my pants down around my ankles. Well,
oh, God, Frank, go in the other room and do that.
Why, there's no one home, okay? And Jason J. Delmonico is upstairs asleep.
All right, anyway, we'll see you guys tonight. Until then, let that be a lesson to you. Sorry, Margaret, I'm sorry you're having to deal with that, you know.
Phil Hendry.